When I was in the fourth grade, my grandfather died. And I sat down on the living room floor with my dad, my brother, and my mom. And my dad rolled out an enormous map on the floor and pointed to Belgrade, Yugoslavia, where my grandfather was from. And he showed us with his finger how my grandfather, his sister, and their parents fled Belgrade after the Nazi invasion through what's now Bosnia and Herzegovina to the coast of what's now Croatia, up into Italy, and eventually through the Alps Mountains into Switzerland. And as a child, this story was a story of great wonder. And as a teenager, I researched this story and made it part of my bar mitzvah ceremony, and it was a story of great pride. And now, it's a story that's full of questions. What does it mean to be the grandson of a refugee? What does it mean to be the grandson of someone who survived genocide? Does it make me closed off? Does it make me fearful? Does it make me a victim? Does it make me a survivor? Does it make me empathetic towards others around the world? These are stories that I wrestle with. These are stories that I think about. What does it say about my identity? How does genocide shape an ethnic identity, a religious identity, a personal identity? What does it mean for me as a person who's lived in the same city his entire life to come from a family where they were forced from their home? The story starts in Belgrade, Yugoslavia. My grandfather and his sister led a good life of dance recitals and music practices, of many friends, reading books in their father's library, playing outside, running through the narrow streets of downtown Belgrade. My great-grandmother was a rarity for her time. She was a working woman. She worked in a bank. And my great-grandfather was a well-connected lawyer and businessman that traveled around Europe and was very civically engaged in his hometown. They lived a joyful life of great privilege and opportunity. They listened to the radio and they knew that there was war in the rest of Europe. They had friends and business associates spread across the continent. But they never thought that the war would come to Yugoslavia. They had never experienced any anti-Semitism. They had led a life of great prosperity. But out of precaution and maybe intuition, they built a bomb shelter in their house. On April 6, 1941, the Nazis bombed Belgrade, Yugoslavia. My family retreated to their bomb shelter, and they were joined by many of their neighbors, one of whom was the vice president of Yugoslavia. My great-grandmother knew that when the Nazis invaded, that they captured young men first, so that when a car came to evacuate the vice president, she pleaded with him to take my grandfather with him. The vice president agreed, took my grandfather and his government vehicle to the airport, and sent the car back to retrieve the rest of my family. The car picked up the rest of my family, and with bombs dropping all around them, ash raining down, the car made it to a train station. My great-grandparents, their daughter, boarded the train, and for 24 hours they rode without food or water to the coast of Yugoslavia, to the city of Dubrovnik. Meanwhile, my grandfather was at the airport with the government officials, and it was soon found out that this 19-year-old was not a government minister. And he was forced to leave. And so he returned home, the only place that he knew, only to find that the rest of his family had already left. My grandfather ended up being captured by the invading forces. He spent his nights in an internment camp and his days working hard labor on the side of a road. Through a network of refugees, friends, and family, word got down to Dubrovnik, to the rest of my family, that my grandfather was captured. One day, my great-grandmother sat in a cafe, and overwhelmed with the fear that her son was going to be murdered, consumed by the sense of disconnectedness, she burst out into tears. And a perfect stranger, a woman she had never met before, came up to her and asked her why she was crying. My great-grandmother explained why her son was captured. She was afraid he was going to be killed. And this woman, who she had never seen before, said, "I know someone that can make fake papers. And my brother works in Belgrade, and he will go to Belgrade and free your son and bring him back to you." This woman, who she had never spoken with, a woman who was not Jewish, who had no family that was captured, that was not at risk of being murdered, risked her life to secure these papers, risked her brother's life by him delivering these papers, and risked their lives in traveling with a Jewish refugee, an escapee really, back to Dubrovnik. They did this. They were successful. My family was reunited in Dubrovnik in a scene that I imagine was full of many tears and long embrace. In 2009, I decided that I wanted to go to Belgrade. I wanted to be the first Winterstein to return to Belgrade since my family fled in 1941. I wanted to see the city where my grandfather grew up. I wanted to retrace the route that him and his family took to escape the Nazis. I wanted to understand how far my family came, how much people sacrificed, what the journey entailed, just so that I could be alive today. So I spent time in Belgrade, walked the same streets that my family walked, visited their synagogue, stood where their house once stood, visited their elementary school, had some fun nights dancing in Belgrade's famous clubs. And then I took a train to the coast, to Dubrovnik. After spending a few days in this beautiful, walled, medieval city, I opened up the phone book, hoping to find the family who saved my grandfather's life. All my family knew was that the woman who approached my great-grandmother in the cafe, that her name was Miss Yob. I only knew her last name. So I opened up the phone book and I looked for all the Yobs in the phone book, and there was only 5 Yobs in the whole phone book. So I wrote down all of their addresses and I got a map, and I just went to the first one that was closest to where I was at the time. And I knocked on the door, and this big hulking man that filled the entire door frame answers the door, and I say, "Ingleski?" English. And he says, "Yes." Okay, good. And I explained to him the story. He's very confused. He invites me in. We sit down at the table. He asks me to tell him the story again. I tell him the story again. And then, like, he's mulling something over, like he's trying to figure something out. He says, "So," excuse my terrible Croatian accent, "so you Israeli boy?" I said, "No, sir. I'm an American." He said, yes, I understand, but your grandfather, he was a Jew." "Yes, my grandfather was Jewish, yes, sir." "And your father, he was a Jew?" "Yes, my father is also Jewish." "And so you are a Jew?" Yes, I am Jewish." I didn't think that was the right time to tell him that Judaism has passed through the mother, but... And so kind of angrily and in a huff, he closes the notebook. And he says, "You come with me right now." And he gets up quickly and he walks out the door and he says, "You stand right here." And he opens up another door and goes in. And I become terrified. I just traveled through Serbia and Bosnia and Herzegovina and Croatia. And if you know anything about that region, they just experienced a genocide in the 90s. And I saw neo-Nazi graffiti all throughout the different lands. I know that there's many ex-combatants that live all over those lands, that there's many people who are alive and well who have committed great atrocities. And I start to get afraid. Maybe this man is one of those men. Maybe he's one of those neo-Nazis. Maybe he's finally gotten a chance to meet an Israeli boy face to face. And it's just as I'm getting completely overwhelmed with fear and I'm about to run away, he opens the door. And standing behind him is this beautiful older woman. He invites me in. We sit down. She serves us tea. He translates. And she says, "Well, I'm Mrs. Yob. I married into the name. I'm not a Yob by birth. But my late husband was one of 5 siblings. And it's a very small family. And it's only those 5 siblings that have the family name. And out of the 5 siblings, my husband was the only one who was old enough, and he was also the only one who had a job in Belgrade during that time. So in all likelihood, it was my husband who delivered those papers to your grandfather. And it was incredibly overwhelming, the distance that I had traversed, the time that had passed, and to sit with the widow of the man in the living room of the man that had made it so I could be alive, and to bridge that distant connection between the two of us gave me great faith in the connectedness in all of us. In 2011, my great aunt, my grandfather's sister, after hearing about my travels, said that she wanted to return to Belgrade for the first time since she left in 1941. She wanted to attend her 70th high school reunion, where one of her classmates confessed his love for her after all these years. All of her Serbian came back to her. She was speaking Serbian with everyone. We visited her old elementary school, her old synagogue. She said, okay, it's time for us to go. We've spent more time here today than I did my whole childhood. And then we took a plane ride to Dubrovnik, and we got the address from the phone book, and we visited Miss Yob. And my great aunt, her son, my father, Miss Yob, myself, three generations of people brought together because one family was willing to risk their lives, was willing to create and was able to give an incredible act of generosity and braveness to my family so that we could all be sitting there today. And this story is one that gives me great faith in our connectedness, that three generations speaking two different languages could sit down around a table like all of you are today because one person was willing to risk their life, was willing to go out on a limb. And I hope that I have an opportunity to be a part of that story and continue that story and be someone that can extend generosity and braveness so that this beautiful gift of life that we all get to experience can continue and thrive and flourish. Thank you, Lakaim.